All right.
So D4. Dan, before we even jump into anything else, what's your understanding of D4?
So look at properties and vehicles.
Vehicles?
That's D16. Sorry. D16. Just properties and lands.
Just, and I make it clear, it's not for vehicles. Vehicles is right, D16. Right. And traditionally, D16, because they were living beings, vehicles. They were your horses and your elephants and your donkeys. You know what I mean? So, like, they were a higher vibration than D4. Because D4 is an inanimate. It's lower than the number 12. And these days, cars, they show up in the D16 just like the horses and the elephants did. But so it's properties. And Parashara says that the D4 gives us Bhagya. What's the Bhagya? What does he mean by Bhagya in the D4?
Blessings.
Yeah, that's what Bhagya means, but why? Why Bhagya?
Yeah. It just shows if you have a good home, if you can hold a property.
So when he says Bhagya, he means Bhagya and lack of Bhagya. So he's not just saying good luck, but he's saying luck and bad luck. So whenever he says that, and so with Bhagya, there's two things that change our karma the most. And they are the two external things that can change our karma, like, very powerfully. Come on, Dan.
Oh, marriage and purchase of a home?
Purchase of a home. And the other thing is having children.
Oh, children. Okay.
And it's not here, but children also drastic change of karma, you know? But when you buy a property, when does the feng shui of the property start impacting you?
The day you buy it? The muhurta?
You agree?
I'm gonna say the day you purchase it.
We both, so you're saying the same. Sarah, you have an opinion? When does a property start to affect you?
She's gone.
You're dealing with the kids? Alright. You got any you got a suggestion there, Austin? You wanna take a guess?
Well, I mean, I just moved about 6 months ago to...
But are you renting, though, or owning?
We are not owning, although we are... It's complicated. we are the occupants and will be so for several years. Mm-hmm. I would say that the day that a person takes possession certainly matters. It may not be the beginning point when the karma begins to impact you, but it certainly... worth noting, like the moment where you because there's usually a handoff where you're given the keys and you step inside for the first time.
So a property will start impacting us from the moment of escrow, and a marriage will start impacting us from the moment that the partner says yes. So the moment of the proposal and the partner says and they say yes, the marriage hasn't started yet, but the karma of marrying that person starts entering your life. And then we fix the muhurta for their marriage to alter that and to hopefully make good. But literally, if you get engaged to somebody and in that engagement, like, you lose your house and your job is falling apart and you get sick, then you should not marry that person. Okay? And in the same way, when buying a house in escrow, the energy of that property starts entering your life, and then the muhurta for moving into the place, you're trying to balance that out. It's your best remedy. And you'll see that sometimes when people buy houses, they're like, what's the best time to move in? And they give you a 2-week window to pick from. And then they're like, oh, well, I can't move, you know, so they become limited because of the karma of the place. But, did I talk about this in the video at all? The guy in the Bay Area?
You've told us that story before. I don't think it was in this video for...
Had to be in the video because it wasn't outside of it.
I've definitely heard this story.
Okay. So I had the pleasure of, you know, when I was still doing construction-related work, I was working in this house in the Bay, and the guy, his arms didn't work. And he said that it must have been from a football injury he had when he was in high school. But the guy was like 60-something. And the thing is, it had only started like maybe 5 or 6 years previously. And I'm talking to him as I'm working, and then he said he just had moved into the house, and it was the same time period that his arms weren't working. And I said to him, and his wife was kind of listening from the other room, and I said to him, I said, so hold on, your arms haven't been working for whatever, like 6 years, and you've been living here for 6 years. Did it start before or after you moved in? And he goes, oh, it started after. And his wife yelled from the other room, it started just after we went in the escrow. Ha, ha, ha. I was like, and he's like, nah, like he didn't want to believe it, you know, that the house had anything to do with the fact that, and I mean literally, he used his mouth to turn on the light switch. Because, like, his arms, he had completely lost nerve control of them. So, that was the biggest confirmation I ever got for that, you know. All right. So,
do you ever know if he moved out and got his arms back?
As far as I know, he didn't believe a thing I said, so. And I worked there for one day, and that was it, so. All right, so Dan, we're looking at Michael Jackson's D4. Is that correct?
Right.
And do you want to give us his data?
Yeah, so the Astro Databank said that there was some conflicting stuff, but what I have here is August 29th, 1958.
And what was the kit? August? Say it again, August?
August 29th.
1958.
1958.
At 7:33 p.m. Hold on,
1958. At what time? 7:33.
And was the confliction with the time?
Yeah, the time. It said dirty data, so I don't know.
What was the number? What was the letter they gave it?
DD. Dirty data.
All right. So we'll see. We'll see if yeah. AM or PM?
PM.
PM. And what's the place?
Gary, Indiana.
Gary.
Mm-hmm. Like the show tune.
Yeah. It makes me just hearing that he's born in Gary, Indiana makes me like think he's like a human, you know. Like when I think of him, I don't think of humans. All right. So
it's quite a place.
It's what?
It's quite a place.
And so let's see. And the first thing to really look at it, whether this is a valid chart or not, is we look at his D9. And I mean, we know the day is correct. It's just a matter of whether the hour is correct or not. And we see Jupiter and Moon in the rising sign. And with Jupiter and Moon in the rising sign. Hold on. You gonna say hi, Trium?
Hi, buddy.
Come over, say hi to everybody.
Say hi.
Over here, come on. Come here.
Guys, teaching on the computer before.
You say hi? Oh, say hi to everybody. Say hi, Sarah. Hi, Dan. Hi, Austin.
They're all waving at you.
All right.
Yay.
Oh.
Bodhi's like, me too.
Okay.
You said yours is showing Jupiter and Moon in the rising?
Yeah.
In the D9, you're saying?
Yeah. What are you getting?
I have Jupiter in the rising, but Moon in the sixth house.
Whoa. That's not possible.
Right. Did you put in PM?
I put in PM, but that wouldn't change PM. August 31st?
August 29th.
Okay, 29. That's where we are. All right. But now I'm getting... I'm getting Libra D9.
I'm getting Scorpio.
I don't know. We might have to skip it. I don't think Michael Jackson is in my famous folder. Famous charts.
That's where
and I'll dig up what Visti uses. No, we don't have a rectified chart by Visti. Oh, you should have let me know. I would have given you a different person. Let's use Trumps real fast. Everybody's got Trumps, right? Everybody got Trump's chart?
I don't.
I'm putting it in now.
Trump is June 14th, 1946, 9:51 a.m. I think in Jamaica, New York. June 14th, 1946, 9:51 a.m. So we have real estate mogul, right? Isn't that what they call him, real estate mogul? So he has to have something nice in the D4. Everybody have his chart?
Almost.
Lugna should be 6 degrees Leo.
Yep.
All right, what do you see in the D4?
Moon, Mars, and K2 in the Lugna.
So the two lords of the fourth have both gone to the Lugna.
Yeah.
An important, this is a little special thing, it's not mentioned in the chapter at all. What kind of moon is that in the Lugna?
Cursed moon.
It's cursed, but what else? What tithi would it be?
What tithi? Oh, what is it?
Nope, not the tithi of birth.
What?
The Varga tithi. If we go moon opposite sun, we're at a full moon. So that's a full moon in the Varga chart. So we have full moon in Lugna.
Right.
Lugnalord has gone to the seventh in the house of business. And what is that seventh house in the D4?
In the D4, it's the business agreement.
So he's all about business deals when it comes to property.
Right.
So the Lugnalord is gone, and it's conjunct a Rahu in its own sign.
Mm-hmm.
Matches his D10. D10 matches his 10th house of the Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a beautiful alignment. That becomes a Raj Yoga. That the combination in the 10th house is also the combination in his house of business deals. So he has the two lords of the fourth. The two lords being Mars and Ketu have gone to the first house, meaning he's always thinking about properties. He's always thinking about his land. And the lord of the Lugna, where his intention, where his focus is, I mean, think he could be thinking about the fifth house. He could be thinking about who he's going to rent to, who his clients are, making sure that they're well taken care of. But his book, what was his book called? The Art of the Deal, right? And if we look, you know, that seventh house of the D4, it's all about the deal. It's about the property arrangements. It's about the contracts. The Art of the Deal. So his D4 gave us the title of his book. And this is we're looking at this blind, right? So, you know, like we couldn't have picked that better. who are the Karakas of this chart?
Moon, Mars, and K2, and they're all in the first.
Exactly. Moon, Mars, and K2 are the Karakas of this chart, and they're all in the first. So we see a real estate mogul here.
Yeah.
All right. Anything more? Yeah.
It says that Rahu and Saturn create problems.
Uh-huh.
How would that be? Just like Saturn bringing like a house that's like falling apart?
So Rahu's in his own sign.
Okay. So it's a good Rahu.
In his own sign or exalted, he's not going to cause any problems. Saturn, on the other hand, is over there, and he will cause problems. And Saturn is prosperity that comes from personal loss of land.
Okay.
And it's kind of a nasty Saturn if we think about how this guy does deal. So it's the prosperity that comes from losing your land. So if we think about his foreclosures... And I mean, his big thing is he builds a place, then he goes into bankruptcy with it under a company name, and then he buys it back without having for a quarter of the price.
Uh-huh.
And so that's that, you know, that Saturn there is really creating a not honest, a not good business deal. You know, I wouldn't want to close with him. What else? We have Jupiter showing 8th from the 4th shows the loans to make the gain of owning land. Inherited land gains. So we have this Jupiter there. So Jupiter shows he had lots of inherited lands. That he was, they were already there. He had this bhagya, this blessing from a previous life. And oh, look at that. Mercury and Jupiter in exchange. Parivartana. And so power and authority in the house or home. And so he, do you know anything of, so you researched Jackson instead, but do we know, like what kind of lands did he inherit? Because this is almost like renter type lands inheriting because of that Parivartana with the fifth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know some of the buildings he has,
but those are the ones that he has now. You don't know what he had originally.
No.
But you see how I'm looking at it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Would Rahu give?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, wasn't his father a bit of a slumlord?
I don't mean, know. That,
that's
I don't know, but that would make sense with the party of arts in between the 5th and the 11th.
Right.
Does the...
Sorry.
No, the 5th is the renters and the money and you're making from the renters and your power and authority over them. And the 11th is your inheritance and what lands you've gotten. So that Parivartana there means he's like inheriting renters. Not just properties. Those are shady deals, though, that guy does. That Rahu in the 7th with the sun is pure shady deals. All right. Let's see. Anybody here own land besides me? Just me, huh?
I think Sarah's...
Sarah?
Not technically anymore.
Not technically anymore? Okay, let's look at your chart real fast. Just real fast, we all have it. But.
Technically, I've never owned it, but I bought it with somebody. My name never went on paperwork, so I don't know how that would apply.
I don't know. Let's look and see.
Woo! Yeah, let's do it.
So, Austin, it's February 28th, 1980. At 2:28 a.m. Eat more of this. You let me eat it. Eat it. And kill me. Santa Clara, California.
What was the time of day again?
Time was 2:28 a.m.
All right. Thank you.
Time of night. And when I look at the D4, ooh, it's a tough one, Sarah, because it changes a minute and 9 seconds earlier and 32 minutes later. So we're right on a line there. What's our Navamsa change at? A minute and 9 seconds earlier. How are you sure about your Navamsa?
My Navamsa seems pretty right on, actually.
You say?
What?
I have Aries Navamsa Lagna.
Yes.
And you sing?
I mean, I can kind of see that in certain regard.
And you sing?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, but and from a teacher, too.
From a teacher. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing a little stay with it. And you do martial arts, right?
Yes.
So that Aries Lagna there.
Okay. Yeah.
So if we're not going to change the D9, then that means the D4 is most because they change the same way when we go early. Both change a minute and 9 seconds earlier. So you see how I'm keeping the accuracy of the D4 based upon the D9. I'm not going to try and rectify the D4 by its own self, being that we don't have clear properties to look at. You got that, but we got a lot of clarity in the D9 that we can use to rectify that. Sometimes we're going to use the D12 to rectify. Sometimes we're going to, you know, so we really look at, you know, what can we use to get clarity in a divisional chart. So when we look, we see that we have, let's see, I'm going to let Dan analyze this. Go ahead, Dan. What do you think?
Okay, so we're looking at the fourth lord going to the 12th.
Fourth lord went to the 12th.
So some inheritance of property. No, 11th. Personal loss.
Yeah. So it's loss that brings some benefit. Potentially.
Right. By losing the land, there's some other benefit in life.
Losing also means selling it, you know. Getting okay. it's loss. It's going away.
Okay. And Jupiter seems to be in okay dignity.
Okay, dignity. So there should be some money from selling land.
Right.
But your name was never on it. But what's the deal with your ex giving you some portion, or how's that working?
It's supposedly going to happen sometime this fall, winter type. I should be getting some payment.
All right. Payment, to ensure the payment for that, we want to do something to activate that Jupiter. Jupiter is both the Lugna Lord and the Fourth Lord there, and he's showing some income, right, from losing a property. So when it comes time that he's supposed to be paying, we want to do a particular type of Tara mantra to ensure that that money's going to come. And so we'll talk about that when the time is right. But you want to do that Tara mantra, and you want to very specifically say, okay, time to pay up.
Okay. Thanks.
So Venus is in the rising sign. What do you think that means, Dan?
She enjoys her house, her property.
She enjoyed. She doesn't. So this is not for renting. This is only for owning the D4.
Okay.
All right. So it means that she wants a beautiful property. She worked really hard to beautify the property. Like, the property's looks were very important for her, and the comforts there and everything of that nature. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anything else to stand out? Do we see any renters?
Renters is Mercury.
Renters is Mercury and the fifth house.
And fifth house. Yeah, well, Mars and Mercury are together with Jupiter, so maybe she could be.
Are they in a placement that's really saying that she's making money from renters?
No.
No, not really. All right. So that's good enough for us for the moment. Real fast, what's the ninth house?
Sun and Rahu.
Yeah, but what is it? What do we see in the ninth?
Labor.
Labor. How much work somebody does on their house. With the Sun and Rahu there, Sun in its own sign, how much work did she do on the property when she was there owning it?
A good amount.
She worked hard on it, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you say, Sarah?
Absolutely. That is true.
We got that sun, so there's a lot of work there. All right, let's real fast do my chart. And I am... All right. Everybody have my data?
No.
No? October 9th, 1976?
All right.
10:06 p.m. In Vineland, New Jersey.
Vineland, like wine vines?
Yep. V-I-N-E-L-A-N-D. Old Viking territory.
All right, got it, thanks.
All right. Oh, Jessica just left. I would have made her analyze it. Sarah, you want to go ahead and analyze this?
If I could pull it up, but I really can't. I mean, I don't have JH, so now I have your info.
So. Okay, Dan, go for it.
Okay, so the Lugna Lord, Lugna Lord and the fourth house lord are in the fourth, and it's exalted, so that's indicating a good property.
Mm-hmm.
Mars is in the fifth, showing that there will be renters.
Mm-hmm.
Moon's in kind of a complicated situation. It's in its own sign, but it's also cursed, and with the some support from Venus.
What is the second house?
Gains from selling, renting. So you're renting your property to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, K2 and Moon are there, so you're renting your buildings mm-hmm. to people as well as your home.
Mm-hmm.
And you have like tenants in like at your house.
Okay.
Saturn and Rahu creating problems with they're actually both fairly strong, so probably not quite too many, but problems of do you have problems with your renters?
Always some problems. Look at that house.
Yeah.
so this is a chart where there's always renters and there's always problems with the renters.
Yeah.
You know, both are showing up. That was pretty good, Dan. So cool. I'll give you a little. I'll give you the background. My first house, I came back from India, and I told my guru told me to start teaching, and I was like, I don't want to teach. I don't want to live in America. And he was trying to convince me to just live in America and teach, and I said, you know, I don't want to just pay rent somewhere. I'll buy something and then maybe pay like the mortgage. And I've been living in India for a number of years at that time. So I came back and I tried to get a loan, and they asked me like about work, and I worked 3 months a year before that. You know, I worked in the summer and then went to India. And they asked me about how much I'd been paying rent, and I didn't pay rent for the last 6 years. So it was, you know, the first two loan people laughed at me. The third loan person, I'm doing this mantra, and the third loan person, when I told her, you know, I'd been living in India, she said, do you know about Puttaparthi? And that's where Sai Baba lives. And so I have friends that live there. I started telling her stories about Sai Baba and about like where he's from and everything like that. And my friends have a house there. Her jaws drop. She's drooling. She said, listen, in order to get a loan, you need to like pay this much in rent. Have a friend fill it out and make sure when they call, they say it. And then she says, in order to like not have a background check, you need over $100,000 in your bank account. So she added two zeros onto what was in my bank account to make it over $100,000. And so then it ran through with no background check, and I had a loan for a $680,000 house. And let me tell you, I could not afford a $680,000 house. It was horrendous. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to come up with $3,000 a month. And then there's all these bills on top of it. So I rented out every single room in the house except for the one I was in and the garage. Okay, so that's you know, so it started with this big, look at that, exalted Mercury, right? And Mars, plenty of renters. So it started that way. And then the house went up $112,000. They gave me the equity. I went and I bought another piece of property, and threw a small structure on it. And then on top of that, the economy was starting to tank at that time. I bought another house up in Nevada City. And then the house went under. Like, not only did it, had it gone up $112,000, it then went back to normal and then went under by $150,000. And so I just short sold that, which, look at that Jupiter right there in the ninth. Like, you know, gains from, like, getting rid of. Like, I still got to keep the equity, even though, you know, I had these a piece of land and a house in town. Developed the land, sold the land, made $100,000 on that, sold, got another one. And then the neighbors to the piece of land, I asked him if I could rent it, and I rented it from him. It was just raw land. I rented it from him for $200 a month. And then I rented it to some ganja growers for $1,500 a month. So I was making $1,300 a month just because I made a deal. So that's that exalted Mercury there. Okay, with the Mars in the second. But trust me, I have lots of problems with renters. Like, there's always some issue. So you did a good job reading that. But, I mean, who would have thought that I would have came back from India and had a $680,000 house? I wouldn't have thought it. But I was kind of living in a weird reality because I'd just come back from India. I was like, okay, I'm going to buy a house. Like, I didn't even think about what's the reality of buying a house. If you asked me right now, you want to buy a $680,000 house, I'd say you're crazy. I can't do that. And this was like, I mean, I had nothing going. And yeah, so,
You live in your office anyway, right?
Basically. But Exultant Mercury, that's what Exultant Mercury does, you know?
Okay.
And so quick question for him. The exalted Mercury in that chart would be magnified because it's exalted in the Rasi, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And so
bona fide.
Say again.
Oh, I was and bona fide by that that trine to Jupiter.
It is supporting. It is fully supporting and Jupiter's in trine in both.
Right. Well, and so, and forgive me if I'm too far off topic, but I'm just looking at the standard chart.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing the Saturn, the 10th ruling the 4th. We're talking about the exalted Mercury, but we have the Jupiter hitting that Mercury, but then Saturn's also giving that Mercury a bit of a kick. Yeah. But is that because Saturn is the Lord of the Fourth, is that perhaps useful only or specifically in this fourth house context? Because Mercury, it does have the attentions of the fourth house Lord.
Well, Mercury is the fourth house Lord for us, for Virgo.
Right. No, I'm talking about the natal, the standard Rashi chart, as it relates to the specific D chart.
Yeah. So the thing is, when we get to dashas, if you mm-hmm. look at the buying and selling and when the properties are coming and going, in the Rashi, we'll be using the Graha dasha to see that when Saturn came, I lost properties.
Okay.
And when Jupiter was activated, mm-hmm. I gained properties.
Right. That makes sense.
So the aspects are being activated at different times based upon dasha.
Mm-hmm.
The Graha aspects are not always activated.
Okay.
When we go into the D4, there's another dasha called Narayana D4 dasha. And so right up until about a few weeks ago, I was running a ninth house D4 dasha. So if you look at my D4, I just bought a brand new house. And like that Mercury is indicating, it's a 3,800 square foot house on 10 acres with a stream running through it. That Mercury is taking care of me, okay? And it was a foreclosure, so it took a lot of fixing up. But if you look, what's the ninth house? I was just running a ninth house dasha.
Ruled by Aquarius, ruled by Rahu and Saturn. So
ruled by Rahu and Saturn, but it's the house of hard labor. So we bought a foreclosure. I had to replace all the pipes in the house to make the water work. You know, half the handles in the kitchen were broken off the cabinets. It's like this really incredible house, but the people that were in it last had gotten a methamphetamine addiction, and so they basically tore the house apart. And like they didn't fix anything, and so it's this beautiful, beautiful house that like was really beaten up. And so the last year it was like super work to fix things up. But I just moved into that 10th house dasha, and with that 10th house dasha, I'm like in the office all the time. I'm in the office way more than I'm at home. So even this will show whether I'm home or not home. Did I answer your question, Austin, about those different factors?
Yeah, you did. Thank you.
Hey, I'm right there. Let's see. Maybe get you a little bit more in there. All right. And this is Austin. He's a big Western astrologer who's been digging into the Vedic realm, and we interact on a regular basis. And we were talking, so I said, why don't you jump in on class? All right. I think we covered D4 good. Any questions on the D4? Dan, you also did the D6, huh?
Yeah. Again, looking at Michael Jackson.
And but we don't with his his DD chart. You gotta, you should have wrote me about that. We don't want to use DD. Nothing under B do we want to use for research purposes.
Right.
Or unless we can look at it and we're sure about its rectification, you know.
It seemed like it made sense because he had sun in the ninth house. I don't know.
All right. Anybody here been in big legal battles? Among us? No big legal battles? Who did I assign D6? It was Ravi. Ravi was supposed to do the research and they weren't able they couldn't make it today because they had some family visiting. All right. So,
all right, hold on. I may have the chart of someone whose identity I cannot reveal, but who is one of the most legally contentious. No, is literally the person who's been in the most lawsuits on both sides of anyone I've ever met or read for. Would that be interesting? I could probably say things about their life without revealing their identity.
So go ahead and give us.
Okay, let me see if I can find that. I just switched to different chart software, and so I'm a little disoriented. I'm having Photoshop syndrome where there are too many options.
So with the D6, while you're looking for it, I'll talk about it. So Lugna is the person themselves. And we look at Lugna and trines. So what's the fifth house trine?
The support.
Who's gonna help you? Who's gonna help you like overcome the enemy? And then the ninth house? That's the protection. If we go to court, that's the person that stands up and was like, I was with him that night. He wasn't there. Or whatever, you know. They're your protection. If we're looking at, like, going to war, that would be the person who's going to be your ally in helping protect you. Now, just as if we have Jupiter there, what kind of protection do you have?
Pretty good stuff.
Good stuff, but let's get more specific.
Someone
with lots of wisdom, somebody with a lot of money. Either or. You know, Jupiter would either give a rich protector or an intelligent protector.
And would that include if it was Jupiter was the house lord?
It'll also help if Jupiter's the house lord. Okay. Now if we have what about if we have Rahu there?
He'll lie for you.
They'll lie for you. They'll gangster for you. They might even go and kill the other people at night while they're sleeping. You know, it's just like they will do underhanded things to make you win. So anything in the ninth house of the D6 is good for you. Got that?
Same with fifth.
Then. Most things are good in the fifth. I mean, if it's Nietzsche or whatever, it's mm-hmm. gonna not be as good. But anything in the ninth protects you and is beneficial. Now, the enemy is what?
Prosecutors, the DA. If it's litigation,
where do we see that?
Oh, in the third?
Not the third.
The sixth
house. Mm-hmm. All right. So you or Lugna and trines to it are your support and protection. So if the sixth house is the enemy, what is the enemy's support?
The tenth house.
The tenth house. And the enemy's protection?
It's the second.
The second house. So the second house is your marka. The second house is killing you. Anything in the second house of the D6 is hurting you. Anything in the 10th house of the D6 is not your friend. It's their friend. Okay. You got that chart ready, Austin?
And that I do.
All right.
All right. So this chart is August 16th, 1952.
16th, you said?
16th, correct.
1962?
At 52. Sorry, 52. I might have said 62. August 16th, 1952.
August 16th.
And the birth took place at 7:02 p.m. in Redding, California. R-E-D-D-I-N-G.
And it's a male?
It is a male.
And we will save him as...
I recommend Mr. Lawsuit.
All right, Mr. Lawsuit.
So this person, a little background, this person has, I would say, not been, yeah. I think this person has not been free of legal entanglement for 20 years.
So if we look at the D6, we got Exalted Sun in the D6 Lugna. And the lord of that D6 Lugna is Mars, gone to the 7th house. What is Mars in the 7th house?
Yes.
Marna Karkastana. So he always is feeling, so it's quite a contradiction there. An Exalted Lord there, yeah. But the Exalted Lord is in a sign that feels like it's dying. So it's constantly under this affliction, but yet constantly like, I'm the boss here, I'm taking charge, I'm feeling like I'm dying and I'm gonna get you. Okay? So we see it's a very fiery, you know, it's Sun in Aries. It's extremely fiery, extremely active. Seventh house. What is that seventh house where the Lord is being placed?
What does it represent?
Uh-huh. What is the second from the Lugna?
The resources that we have. So I was saying it's resources.
But no, it's not our resources that second.
That's what I'm saying, of the enemy.
The enemies, yeah, it's what hurts us and destroys us. Mm-hmm. So the second from the enemy is also what hurts them and destroys them. It's what kills them. Mm-hmm. So the Lugna Lord has gone to the house of what kills them. So where's his mind always thinking about? How am I gonna kill the enemy? How am I gonna get them? It's a constant like thought process. You agree with that, Austin?
100%. And I would also like to add that this person, like you said, you're talking about being in the place where the planet feels like it's dying. Mm-hmm. This person always feels like they're being threatened with an extinction level event. And so it's total like back to the, you know, rat in a corner, back to the wall. Anything goes because this could be it.
Uh-huh.
And they bring this attitude to bear in situations where it is appropriate and in situations where it is obviously a fantasy. But that's how they respond.
Mm-hmm. And so here, let's look at their enemies. Sarah, what do you think about their enemies?
Can you tell me where the rest of the planets are, and then I can maybe say something.
So it's Aries Lugna, Sun in the first, Venus in the fourth, Moon in the fifth, Jupiter in the sixth, Mars in the seventh, Saturn in the tenth, Mercury in the 11th, and Ketu and Rahu in the 12th.
Can I ask you a question about that Ketu and the 12th thing? Because
yeah.
I've been noticing that in some charts. How come they're together? I thought they were always... I probably should know the answer to this already, but I thought they were always aspecting because they're...
They're either always opposite or always together. So it depends on the chart. Yeah.
All right. I guess I just recently came across that. Okay, yeah. So what was your question then? What about the enemy?
Yeah, tell me about the enemy. Jupiter in Virgo.
Well, the house lord is Mercury, and that's moved to the 11th, where, well, it says punishment. So, but given that it's there's Jupiter there in the sixth, I would think that that makes them pretty.
The punishment is your own is the punishment from the Lagna.
Oh.
So if the Lord of the Six has gone to the house of the punishment, what is the enemy trying to do to this guy?
Punish him.
They're trying to punish him.
Yeah, okay, that's, by the way, that is so dead on and hilarious. although this person has been involved in lots and lots and lots of legal battles, the most persistent and horrible of those was a person that he had a very close relationship with, and everybody who's aware of the system, or excuse me, aware of the situation, is like, they're just trying to punish him. It's not; they don't even want the money. They just want to punish him. That's everybody close to the situation would agree on that. That punishment is absolutely crucial. It's a key theme, an attempt to punish.
It's fully that's. And it's retrograde, meaning you're saying there's one. I'm seeing three. I'm seeing three people that are just trying to punish him. Three different legal battles. Three different enemies.
Because it's retrograde.
Yeah.
So it's triple the strength.
Triple the strength means triple the people.
That's interesting. I don't have quite enough data to confirm that.
Yeah. But it's there. That's what's being indicated. And how smart? How smart? Are his does what kind of enemy does he pick on weak people or does he have what kind of enemies, Sarah? With that Jupiter. He's picking on smart people that have money. He's not picking an easy challenge.
Correct.
If somebody had a debilitated planet or something like that in the six, then you're just like then they're just picking on them. Then they win. An exalted sun in Lagna, it's gonna destroy anything in the six. But it's a good planet in the sixth and a good planet in the first. And that's what we look at, is how well does somebody win? If the first is way stronger than the sixth, the person always wins. If the sixth is way stronger than the first, the person always loses. But here we have exalted sun in the first and Jupiter in the sixth. So, I mean, it's a you know, he's fighting with might, they're fighting with knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very accurate.
And so... how much support does his enemy have?
It seems like it can be kind of neutral.
No. Can you hit the light? Compare his support, which is his fifth house, to his enemy's support, which is his enemy's fifth house.
It seems like he has more support.
Why?
Because, well, the fifth house lord is the sun, which is exalted in the first.
Yeah, let's look more at the planet there for this.
Well, it's moon, so it's more like that kind of more gentle, emotional.
He's got this more gentle, emotional support. What kind of support does his enemy have?
Yeah, I guess that's more a little bit hardcore with Aquarius.
Saturn in its own sign, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, he's stronger than his enemy with that exalted sun. But his enemy has better support. His enemy might not be as hardcore as him, but his enemy is smart enough to pull out the right support to hit him. And he doesn't have the support that's going to stand up to the same level that he is.
Okay.
That's very interesting. One thing that I would add with the sun being the ruler of the fifth, to a certain degree, the person functioning as their own support, or that being suggested by that relationship, this person has represented himself prosé.
the fifth lord and the first.
Yeah, he figured out that he didn't have to pay lawyers, and he didn't actually have to abide by the rules of the bar if he represented himself prosé.
Uh-huh. I gotta write that down. Fifth Lord in first represents self. That is funny. So we all have some
kind of too good.
Say again.
I said, yeah, it's kind of too good.
So, last thing as we go through this D6, and you missed Austin, but we spent a whole whole 2 hours on the D9 and a whole 2 hours on the D10, and so this section we're going through a little faster because. Mm-hmm. For level one, they have to know D9 and D10 good, but these mm-hmm. other ones are, they got to be familiar with. They don't have to be masters of. So,
right.
So the important thing here when somebody goes to battle, so if he's going to court, do we want him to go to, if he needs to file a case, should he file it? If he has the choice, and I'm going to give you four options, should he file a case in the Sun Mahadasha, the Jupiter Mahadasha, the Mars Antardasha, Antardasha, Sun Antardasha, Mars Antardasha, Jupiter Antardasha, or Saturn Antardasha?
Which one? You mean just him personally or anybody?
Him, for this chart, personally. Which of those should he file in if he's going to go to battle with somebody?
Is it Antardasha
specific? Antar, yeah. Just focus on what planet do we want active?
The sun. Well, I mean, it seems like the sun is strongest, but that might be naive.
Nope, let's go for the sun. Sun would be the best time for him to file. Whenever the sun is active, we want him to file. Because that sun is making him win. Right? The sun is really this planet. It's representing himself. It's his hard hitter. If he filed in a Jupiter Antardasha, he's going to lose. Because if Jupiter's active, that means his enemy is being like fully supported more than he is. Saturn Antardasha, that means the support of the enemy is being more active than he is. So we want to look at when somebody talks about filing a court case. And I get situations all the time where somebody says, should I settle out of court or should I take, you know, should I try and fight this or should I just settle out of court? I look at this. I look at what dasha they're in. I see, can they win right now? Does right now support them winning? And so if they can't win, I say settle out of court. If they can win based on this, I say take it to court. Everybody got that? So this is where we make a choice of that nature and other such choices. If he came and he asked you, he said, you know, I got this case and I can only have one witness. Should I have my best friend's wife who has three kids come to the witness stand, or should I have my boss come to the witness stand?
The wife.
Who has three kids because she's a mother. So this shows that a mother is going to be his best support that's going to get him to win. Okay, so I just gave you a few little things of how we can actually use this. And if you get them, then everything else slowly can make sense as well. Cool, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next we're going to do D12. And I'm going to take a small breather. Sarah, we have the chart. Can you? What's the woman we're gonna look at for this next?
Sorry, I had to unmute. Johnny Depp's daughter.
All right.
Her birth. Do you want her birth info now?
Give the birth info, and then I'm gonna give you the stage to tell us a bit about her.
All right, May 27th. 1999.
May 27th. 1999?
Yes.
What time?
At 8:25 p.m.
8:25 p.m.
And the place is called Neuilly-sur-Seine, which is spelled N-E-U.
N-E-U.
I.
L-L-Y. L-L-Y.
Sign, I guess, because it's the river sign. S-E-I-N-E.
S Jackie-I-N-E. That's two words or one?
It's three words.
Oh my goodness.
Nulle sur scène. And that's in France. Nulle sur scène.
And that's in France. Let's see if I can find it.
How do you spell that again? Nulle?
It's N-E-U-I-L-L-Y.
Okay. And just put Nulle in, and then hit the down arrow, and it'll pull it up. N-E-U-I-L-L-Y. And search that France, and then hit the arrow, and it gives a whole bunch, and one is Sorcienne. What's her name?
Lily Rose Depp.
So I'm going to take a break from talking and eat a piece of chocolate. And can you tell us about tell us a little bit about her and her mom and her dad?
Well, her parents are, well, obviously you guys know who Johnny Depp is. I think her mom was a model, and which kind of put her in the limelight, so to speak, for her whole life. And so she's kind of gone the beauty model route as well. And that's kind of the basics of what I read about her, is what I remember of her being, you know, young model in limelight. I think maybe she has a small focus in acting as well. But the D12 I have for her, it doesn't necessarily look like this would be correct for who her parents are. But what I have is her D12 is Sun in K2 and Leo in the first. Does that look right?
You have Sun K2 and Leo in the first?
Is that what you guys have?
May 27th, 1999?
Yes.
May
27th,
1999 at
8:25
p.m.?
Yes.
I have Scorpio.
Oh my goodness. D12.
D12. So, you have Scorpio, Dan?
I have Virgo. What's going on?
Do you have 24-hour time? Because it said 8:25, but I didn't see if it was...
I mean, I guarantee that whatever chart calculator I used was wrong.
I'm just going to... Let's see. So it was May. What day? 19th? May 27th? 1999.
I had it wrong. I had Nulle, not Nulle sur scène. It's Virgo.
Okay. I'm just. Yeah. What was the time again?
8:25 p.m.
25. N E U I L L Y.
Is it PM? She said PM.
Yeah, we'll just double checking since. Was it N E you said? Or N U?
The sign is E I N E.
Oh, there it is. 8:25, France.
8:25
p.m.
or a.m.?
P.m.
You have a.m.
Freedom. All right. And so with this, I have 6:25 Cancer for the Lugna. And with Jay Hora. What's up? What do you have for Lugna, Dan?
Virgo?
D1 Lugna.
Oh, I have Libra.
What did I do wrong
with
here?
Moon and Mars.
I know.
That makes sense. What Libra you said 29 degrees?
Yeah.
Why am I not getting that in the other program? May 27th, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the time changed. So I got, after lots of whatever, and that's a good, that's an AA rating or B rating or what do you know? Do you remember?
I can look real quick. I have it up. Hold on. AA.
All right. Oh, beautiful. All right. So when we look at the D12... And let's just real fast look at the D9. D9 changes 14 minutes earlier, 3 minute 43 seconds later. So 3 minute 43 seconds later, and the D12 changes 9 minutes earlier and 3 minute 43 seconds later. So both change 3 minutes 43 seconds later. And so let's just compare the Navamsha for the present and Navamsha for later. And so if the present Navamsha has Venus in Gemini with Mars and Moon in Trine. If we go later, we have Ketu with nothing else in Trine. And you said she's, what is she doing? She's an actress and a model?
Modeling. Yeah, modeling.
And some acting?
Yes, and doing some kind of things with some kind of beauty type of.
Beauty
just
stuff.
As beauty model, so that could be modeling. It could maybe she has some beauty line or something.
So we'll stay with Venus in the Vamsha Lagna, right? Mm-hmm. Not K2. K2 wouldn't really, you know, she'd be like, ah, forget you, Dad. I'm gonna do science and stuff. I'm gonna be a smart woman here and really represent what women. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but mm-hmm. But okay. So we'll stay with this, which means we most likely will stay with the D12. What's our Karakas in the D12?
The sun and the moon in the fourth and ninth house.
Sun and the moon. And so let's just look at Karakas first. How are the Karakas placed?
Well, can you tell me where they are? I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. So it's Virgo, Lagna. And we have sun,
yes,
in,
I got
the, sun in the first. Saturn, Mars. So in the second house, we have Saturn, Mars, K2, and Mercury.
Ooh, okay.
In the seventh house, we have Moon. And in the eighth house, we have Jupiter, Rahu, and Venus.
Oh. Okay. So, well, with the Sun and the Moon, oh, they're opposites.
And what did we say when the Sun and Moon are opposite? What kind of Moon is it?
A full Moon.
Full Moon.
It's interesting because that would be, like, you know, kind of her dad's wife and... And in a way, you know, she's a model as well, so she's really beautiful.
Yeah, but from Lugna, it's her and her relationship.
Oh.
To her parents.
Just to the energies of father, the energies of mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, well, they come into life with a conflict with their mother and father. They're anti-authority or whatever, you know.
Hmm.
How is this situated? Is there any problems with the sun and the moon? No problems.
Okay.
Sun's in the first. It's a great place for the sun. So father's good. Father's been there for her. Father, strong father archetype. Moon's in the seventh house. Not afflicted. Not you know, it's in Pisces, a sattvic sign. So strong mother archetype. So there's no affliction there. There's no like thing that says I'm going to lose my mom or I'm going to lose father or I'm going to have a terrible father or there's going to be some issue with my mothering. Nothing like that showing up. Okay? So we got that. Then we go to to look at father. Which house do we go to?
The ninth.
Ninth.
So house lord has moved to the eighth.
House lord has gone to the eighth. So is that a bad thing that it's in the eighth?
It's a trick question. Not necessarily.
Good. Good job. You got it. Good. Because it doesn't matter from the first. What we're looking at is from the ninth. And now we read about the father from that ninth lord. So if you take the Venus's Lagna, tell me about what that dad is like.
Well, he has apparently a lot going on in his sixth house.
Not a sixth, a seventh. His seventh house, because all that's in the yeah.
It's on Mars, K2, Mercury is in her third in this D12.
It's in her second. In her second.
That would be the six.
Well, wouldn't that be the one?
We're reading from the ninth lord, not the ninth house. The ninth lord.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay, so that's his seventh then. Okay. What do you want to know about him exactly?
I don't know. Tell just give me some predictions here.
All right. Well, he's got
a lot going on, or not much.
A lot going on in different areas of life. So, like, it, relative to his expenses,
would definitely be a
things
lot of
that he spends money on. He's got Jupiter, Rahu, Venus there. Yeah.
Jupiter, Rahu, Venus. Is Jupiter, Rahu good together?
No.
No.
No, they're very afflicted.
And Rahu, Venus together? What kind of energy does that give? That's Johnny Depp right there, you know?
I guess
that dark, slight sexy of appeal, but a dark and twisted, you know?
Yeah.
But yet somehow he makes it light and funny. So there's the Jupiter element.
Mm-hmm.
He's also ungodly rich. There is some stuff that came out about how I think over his career he's earned something like $600 million, and there was there's some legal money trouble he has now, and some of his expenses came out, and apparently he was spending well over $1 million a month. That was like his monthly budget for years. So it just in terms of like. With Rahu not being good for the spiritual significations of either Venus or Jupiter, but perhaps pushing some of the material beneficence to an extreme, might describe someone who, you know, earned $600 million by the time they were 50.
Totally. And if we look at the mother, where's the mother placed? Nope.
Oh, she's in...
She's in the same thing. She's right there with him.
Yeah.
So he invested in a bunch of other businesses. Yeah. Do you know about that, Austin?
I know that he paid a lot of people to do a lot of things. I've just kind of heard about this in passing, but you know, you don't spend $1 million a month on tacos. he had a crazy security budget. I'm sure he kept a lot of people's families fed.
Yeah, but you see all that stuff in the seventh house from there? That's businesses.
Yeah, let me look it up online while y'all are talking.
Yeah. But that's somebody who has lots of businesses. All right, and there's something going on with that Venus. And so let's take a look at that. Where's the lord of that house go? It's Mars. It's gone to the second house. The lord of the second house has gone to the eighth. So Venus and Mars are Parivartana. So that is some... Wow. That's somebody whose parents are Johnny Depp. All right. let's look at something simpler.
Okay, well, just real quick before we move on.
Yeah.
So it looks like he owns 14 different properties or residences, and he had a 40-person staff. Let's see what else. He also invested, he had a very large boat, an $18 million boat. Which apparently he sold to J.K. Rowling in 2016.
Doesn't talk about
He owns his own village. He has a 37-acre village in the south of France. Not a villa, mind you, but a village. Anyway.
All right. So that was fun. Who here wants to look at their parents?
I will, because mine just can't possibly be them.
All right.
But then you sit and you record and you're like, well, then there's the parents and the perception of the parents. So
yeah. So Amrit Davidya beat you to saying I will by just a second. So we're gonna we'll look at hers first. Austin, Amrit Davidya is March 17th, 1982. 12:19 p.m.
So was that March 17th, 1992? Did I hear that correctly?
March 17th, 1982.
Oh, 82. I thought that might be an issue. And then what is the time of day?
I just did a reading for somebody born in 92 today, who's super successful. I was like, wow, you're so like, you're only 25. Let's see. So March 17th, 1982, 12:19 p.m. in Jacksonville, Florida.
Alrighty.
Jacksonville. Oh, so you know you're gonna be in charge of the musicians officially now.
Oh, okay.
So and
I started calling you.
Oh, I'm gonna put that. That was a side conversation, but all right. So D12.
Hey,
yeah.
My program stopped working. Could someone just tell me what the chart looks like?
Yep. So we're Scorpio, Lugna. Moon in the, and hold on, let me make sure. So the D9 changes 17 seconds earlier. This is a rectified one that we're using?
I think so, yeah.
Okay,
if
and
it's in your system, yeah.
And the D12 is 4 minutes one way, 7 minutes the other way. So we'll use the D12. So it's Scorpio, Lugna, Moon in the third. In the sixth house, we have Sun, Rahu, and Jupiter. In the seventh house, we have Mars. In the eighth house, we have Mercury. In the ninth house, we have Saturn. In the 10th house, we have Venus. And in the 12th house, we have K2. All right. So first thing, we look at Sun and Moon. Do we have any issues with the Moon? In Saturn sign, there's nothing wrong with that. Is there any affliction?
Aspected by Saturn.
Sorry. Aspected by Saturn. So we have, you know,
it has maybe a Parivartana.
Parivartana with Saturn.
Yeah.
So Parivartana with Saturn is gonna say what? What would the archetype of mother in a Parivartana with Saturn be doing?
She's a very serious
folding.
It makes it so that she has her mother is coming like a very serious, very strong, very Saturnian mother.
Very much so.
Okay. And that's just archetypally. Like, not even her personality, just like from family line. Grandmother was like that, mother's like that. It's just that's how the concept of mother exists in her family. Mm-hmm. So it's not overly personal. It's like that's just what she knows how to do. And that's how she was transmitted, and that's what she transmitted to Amrita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're Jews, and they're very, like, mm-hmm. you know, we've been oppressed. They have, I can't describe it, but they have that.
Judaism is Saturnian, is a Saturnian religion. So it's perfect.
Yeah.
And what about the sun archetype? There you see it.
With the moon.
Yeah. Everything should line up. So, but what about the sun? What about the father archetype? Remember, we're in archetypal realm here. What is the archetype that the family holds?
Kind of fiery, but with some wisdom and a little twisted.
Good. But so we don't need to go fiery, but there's an uprightness,
yeah.
There's a properness,
yeah.
But there's a certain twistedness, there's a certain not appropriateness.
Yeah, there's a lot of alcoholism.
Addiction.
Mm-hmm.
The key word is addiction. So with Rahu, we don't say alcohol because it can be other type of addictions too.
Right.
It's only alcohol because our culture, that's the most accepted addiction.
Right.
But it could be any type of addiction with Rahu. Saturn aspect. So Saturn is making it alcohol.
Right.
So Saturn makes it alcohol, Rahu just makes it addiction.
Huh.
You got the differentiation?
Okay.
And that's in a Rashi, that's anywhere. All right. So let's get personal now. So those were the archetypes. You see the archetypes that are coming in? So now, when she goes for... I won't go into that. That's too psychological. Let's see. Sarah, you got the chart?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about her mom, personally. What do we look for first?
The fourth house lord. So it's gone to the ninth, which is in there with Cancer, which is ruled by the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So her mom maybe is more orthodox,
mm-hmm.
But can also be, but see, so would you say, like, because the moon, the house lord, where Saturn has landed, is not very happy in Capricorn, that there's something going on with that relationship?
You can, if you want to get really deep, but for our quick purposes in general, we just look, Saturn in Cancer is called the Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a person...
Why is it
the emotions freeze up, and Saturn is the metal is iron. And so it makes this very tough, strict person.
Okay.
So, tough mother, you know, there's not much emotion stuff there. But look at the second from it. What's the second from Saturn say? How's her mom speak?
Very beautifully.
She speaks really sweetly, right? So she's a tough woman, but she says nice things. She's kind in how she approaches it. Nothing in the third, K2 in the fourth, 5, 6, 7, moon in the seventh. We won't talk about that. 8, 9, 10. So we got Saturn. We got Rahu, Sun, and Jupiter in the 10th house. What type of career do you think the mother is involved in?
Maybe something that has to do with holding a more lofty position in either government, but it's kind of more like, I only say that because the house lord is Mars and the sun is there, but something unorthodox as well that has to do with spiritual knowledge.
And Jupiter,
am I right at all?
Jupiter, I would just say education or legal stuff. That's how I would take Jupiter from this perspective.
Yeah.
What's your mom do?
Well, she just retired, but she was one of the kind of, she went up and up in this company that was... American Institutes for Research. They got grants from the government.
So research, that's the Rahu.
Well, for
Rahu showing up as research.
Funding educational programs.
For funding educational programs, that's
like
the Jupiter.
At-risk youth and stuff like that.
Funded by the government, which is the exalted sun.
Yeah.
All right, so you did a good job, and you see how it turned out. So you see how it's all there. The mother's career is 100% being indicated by that Lord. Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
With funding the educational research and programs, was that in any way for underprivileged or dispossessed people, or is it just like general education?
Yeah, a lot of it was for at-risk youth, special education.
Because I was thinking that might be the Rahu thing. What I got from the Rahu Jupiter at first was like trying to help or uplift the dispossessed or those who are in a rough place in society.
The Head Start program, they
yeah.
their company that started
I,
that
I taught in a Head Start class for a while.
Yeah.
So you see how it's showing up there,
yeah.
right? But do you see how we can get the parent's career? And this is always a mind-blower. When you sit there and you look at a person and you're like, so does your, and you're trying to rectify the D12, and you say, so was your dad a university or professor or teacher, or was he a carpenter? And was your mom, you know what I mean? And you give them, and they're like, my dad was, and they're just like, it's, people are kind of mind blown by that you can see their parents' career in their chart.
Yeah.
And really, it's kind of weird, because we can also go to the D7 and do the same thing, the 10th from the planet ruling who our kid is, and we can see their career. So you can see your parents' career, and you can see your kid's career in these divisional charts. Now, if that's how reality's working, what the heck does that mean? Like, who's in charge? You know? Like, where's free will here? And I'm not even going to debate, but we saw mom's job. We can go to the kid's chart and see her kid's job.
Yeah.
So what are the implications of that? And we see in the ancient texts, there's always discussion, you know, about what those implications are. Let's do dad real fast, and then we'll move on to our next divisional chart. When we look at dad here. Go ahead, Sarah. You're rocking it.
Okay, so her dad has moved to the third in there with Capricorn. So he's kind of like
So moon in a sign of Saturn indicating a person in this chart or some of these other divisionals will indicate alcoholism. Moon Saturn. Moon is liquid, Saturn is alcohol. And you said it's the father who has alcoholism or what?
His family, his side of the family kind of is. He does maybe have a little bit of problem.
Now, just look quickly, Sarah, at the houses from that. And you can go deeper. You could spend the whole reading just on this chart. But for our purposes in a reading, we don't want to spend more than 4 or 5 minutes here in a reading. So just go quickly the houses from that planet.
Okay, let me ask real quick. Was K2 in this D12, was it in the 11th or the 12th house?
12th house.
Okay. So was your dad maybe some kind of computer guy?
Wait, are we reading?
Or what's that?
From there, 1, 2, 3, 4, she's going. She's going, or 10. She's going right to... Read all the houses.
Yeah,
read
it.
But isn't Mars the card have for the father? Oh, sorry. Yeah.
The 10th. She's reading the 10th from.
Computer science or something that maybe has to do also with this, I don't know, something creative, Venus-y type energy.
He was in safety maintenance at United Airlines for many years. So it was on the computer.
United Airlines. Who rules airplanes?
K2.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so you see in the 10th house from there, we have, he works for United Airlines. So we know this is the correct D12. And so we know her D9 is correct, too, because they changed the same time, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Do you see how you got that rectification? And if you needed to go in depth, and the person said, oh, my... And so, just so you know, when we time death of parents, this the transits and everything from this chart become very important.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask, is how do you look at that?
Yep. And grandparents were also looking from here. So for we're looking at fourth for mother's mother, we're looking at the fourth from the fourth. For mother's father, we're looking at the ninth from the fourth. For father's mother, like that. We're doing that same calculation in here. All right. So let's jump. You guys got that, right?
Yeah.
We're not gonna do D16. D16 is great for vehicles. Particularly people that have multiple vehicles. D20. Let's see, we got D20. We're gonna go quick on the D20 because I wanna get to the D24 and the D... I don't know if we're gonna have time to get to the D60. We might have to merge D60 with remedies next week. So let's try, let's aim tonight to get D20 and D24. You did the D20? All right.
Yeah.
So who are we looking at?
So
which person though?
I have Osho, but it's had a DD rating.
Really?
Yeah, but we can try it.
So for Osho, I like his Lugna.
Uh-huh.
So for Osho, I've used this chart a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
What's his other, they call him Osho, they call
Bhagavan
him?
Bhagavan Sri Rajneesh.
Rajneesh, what do I have in this? Osho, where are you, Mr. Osho? Acharya Rajneesh. So data for him that I have, see if this matches yours. December 11th, 1931, 5:49 p.m.
I have 5:13.
You have 5:13?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's gonna make a big difference.
Kuchwara.
Huh?
Kuchwara, Madhya Pradesh, Kuchwara.
I don't have, spell it out loud.
K-U-C-H-W-A-D-A.
Okay. And it's a shame that we have that variation. You have 5:13, I have 5:49.
Well,
can somebody look Astro Data Bank? And that's yours is
Astro.
Yeah, my variation has them with five planets in the eighth house.
Of the
Rashi.
Oh, I have them five planets in the seventh house, which right. For Rajneesh is
very applicable. Also.
Applicable, and Rahu then in yours would be in the 11th.
Yeah.
And he'd be Venus, he'd be Taurus rising
yeah.
with the Lord in the 8th.
Yeah.
Where I have him is Gemini rising with the Lord in the 7th.
Mm.
Which is somebody focused on sex and sexuality and relationship.
In the 8th, wouldn't that also
somewhat? The 8th house for sexuality is more of a Western astrology concept. For Vedic, sex is the 7th.
Huh.
Yeah, it's more of a last 40 years of Western astrology, and that's about it.
Yeah.
That's not in any traditional text.
Oh, so good. You know, again, do we want to use this D20? We'll take a quick look at the version I have. We don't even have the Lugna agreed on. 143, his Lugna changes. My goodness. Do you have another? Did you do any others or just Rajneesh?
And then I have the two for Amma, for Amma
Sama. Oh, and we have two for Amma.
I have, in my computer, I have Sri Aurobindo.
All right.
And then I have
we'll have to coordinate this better next time.
We could look at just one of them for Ama.
Yeah, for Ama, let me see the two, because I want, what's the one that I use? I use the one where she has Venus, Venus third from Arudalagna, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one I use. Which is, all right, open. You want to say it out loud for the others to get?
So this is Mata Amritanandamayi, otherwise known as Amaji, September 27th, 1953, 9:09 a.m. And it's Paryakadavu, which is Kerala. It's Paryakadavu.
I'm sorry, that was way too fast.
Which one? The place?
You said 9:03 p.m. or a.m.?
9:09 a.m.
A.m., okay, 9:09 a.m. And then the name, I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Para, P-A-R-A. Mm-hmm. This is all one word. Mm-hmm. Para, yep. Paryakadavu, Paryakadavu.
Okay.
That's Kerala, India.
Cool. Thank you. Paryakadavu?
You know, sometimes if you just do the first four or five letters and you do India and pull it down, it'll let you pick. And that's always easier.
Paryakadavu.
And so for Rashi, she's Libra rising, Saturn in the first. In the fourth house, we have Rahu. In the eighth house, we have Moon. In the ninth house, Jupiter with Aruta Lagna. In the tenth house, we have Ketu. In the third house, we have Mars and Venus. In the 12th house, we have Mercury and Sun. And so there's two charts that are given for Amaji. This was the chart, this was the original chart, and then after she became more famous, they gave a different chart. And it's very common in India that, you know, famous people and politicians, they don't give their real chart, because it's like, the amount of black magic you can do with the real chart is, when you're a good astrologer, is pretty big. So they give a fake chart just to kind of throw people off. And in the other chart they give, Mercury is, I can't remember whether it's third or sixth from Aruta Lagna, but that means somebody who renounces money. In this chart, Venus is third from Aruta Lagna. It means somebody who renounces sexuality and relationship. And if we know Amaji, she has renounced sexuality, but she has a multi-billion dollar ashram temple industry. And so to me, Mercury in the fourth house from Aruta Lagna shows somebody who is a very smart financial person who has not renounced finances, but has renounced sexuality, which the other chart is the opposite. And so I can't agree with that. And this is exalted Saturn in the Lagna. She's officially an incarnation of Kali. She's a Kali form. So Saturn in the Lagna there, that makes exalted, which makes sense to me. Jupiter on the Aruta Lagna, she's a big guru. Now we go to the D20, and the D20 has a Cancer Lagna, and the chance of this being correct is small, but we're just going to dig into it and play. Cancer Lagna, Ketu and Rahu in the second, Mars and Jupiter in the third, Mercury in the sixth, in the ninth we have Sun and Moon, in the 12th, we have Saturn and Venus. Now, what is the conjunction of the Sun and the Moon?
New Moon.
Huh? New Moon. New Moon. What deity rules the New Moon?
Kali.
Kali. So she has Kali Yoga in the 9th house. What's the 9th house representing?
Maybe the doctrine or religion?
The doctrine, the religion, her view on the world. So she has Kali Yoga in the zone of what her view on the world is. Mm. And the doctrine of Kali is we're all the same. Mm. We're all the same. There's no difference between, not just between whites and blacks and men and women, but between humans and animals. We're all living souls. That's the doctrine of Kali. It's the it's a very Advaita non-differentiation doctrine. What's the Lagna indicating?
The mother, the moon.
Yes.
The moon. But what's that? What do we see based upon the Lagna? What does the Lagna indicate in the D20?
Devotional.
It's the attitude.
Right.
It's the attitude. So
I was thinking moon is like,
yeah, so it gives it more devotional, mm-hmm. and more philosophical with the devotional too, going to the ninth house. Mm-hmm. You know, because the ninth is more this philosophy and worldview.
Right.
So there's the devotion, there's the worldview, there's this focus on spreading a certain type of religion. Mm-hmm. But look at what the religion is. It's this Kali Darshana. So spirituality, spiritual family, community, lineage is the second house. What's going on when Rahu and Ketu are going there?
Some twistedness.
Nope, not in this chart. So the sign of Rahu and Ketu, that shows what gets us over our ego, what liberates us.
Right.
So it's a good placement, Rahu and Ketu here. And I shouldn't say good, because it's what's going to destroy the ego. What's going to help us overcome?
I'm sorry, was that in her eighth house?
So no, that's in her second house.
In the second, okay, thank you.
And what's really important for that is the Lord, more than the house, more than the house itself. So we look at the Lord. The Lord is the sun. What's the sun doing?
It's in the ninth.
Giving Amavasya Yoga again. Okay. So it's all, you know, so it's, so her liberation, her worldview, her attitude, they're completely connected. Yeah, interesting, huh?
Yeah.
All right, family deity is what?
Second house.
Second house.
I was thinking Durga.
We have Rahu Ketu, which would indicate Durga, and the Lord of the House is indicating Kali. So we have so a Kali Durga type form. And do you know what her family worshipped before her whole?
I think they were actually Krishna.
Uh huh.
I mean, pretty sure that was. I can look it up.
Okay, but that's where we're getting that indication.
Mm-hmm.
And with her, I think that's going to be. That's good. Let's talk. She goes into these samadhi and these states of trance. Which house is connected to these states of trance that she enters?
It would be the 12th.
12th house, good. And what do we got in the 12th house?
Saturn and Venus.
Saturn and Venus. So what do we say about her states of trance? So it's the seventh lord in that house. Seventh lord is kirtan, dance, celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going into her house of trance. So when she goes into trance, she does it in front of a whole bunch of people. It's a whole part of the kirtan situation. Yeah. It's this whole part of the party and offering.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's working. It's looking pretty good for her.
She actually said, if I ever go, you know, really deeply,
yeah,
like if you ever like to bring me back, you can just start singing.
Mm-hmm.
You can just start, what did she say?
She said just start singing, you know, devotional songs.
Oh.
And she'll come back. It's in her, one of her books.
All right, so good. We got a general idea. So let's pull that into someone in classes. So we did Sarah, we did Amrita. Oh.
Can I see my D20? I want to ask a question about the second house.
So we're going to look at Jessica's D20. Her D20, let's see, it changes 4 minutes one way, 3 minutes the other way, so it looks pretty good. It's Gemini rising, and I'm just going to give the coordinates because that's, I think, faster anyway. Gemini rising, in the second house, we have a debilitated Mars. In the seventh house, we have Ketu and Rahu. In the eighth house, we have Venus. In the ninth house, we have Sun. In the 11th house, we have Jupiter. And in the 12th house, we have Mercury, Moon, and Saturn. Okay, question?
So the second house is family or your spiritual community?
Spiritual community. It's not your family. It's your spiritual family. There's a big difference between that. And some people are lucky enough that they go to church with their mom and dad and grandmom and grandpa. And so the spiritual family, that church or whatever that they go to, or the temple, if they're Hindus that they're going to, that they're all connected. But some of us, it's not. So we got to really make sure that this is, second house is spiritual family here. And when we look at it saying family deity, it's really, for example, if I went to the Sacramento, the Ganesh temple, once a week, they would become my family. They'd become my spiritual family. We all are revolving around the same deity.
So in this chart, Nietzsche's good, which is good,
not good. The Nietzsche's, what is a Nietzsche planet becomes what? As a deity. This is family deity. So Nietzsche planet as family deity is becoming what? Is it a Vishnu form?
I don't know.
An exalted planet. What's the deity it becomes?
Exalted would be Vishnu.
Exalted Vishnu. This is debilitated. So what's it becoming? It's
like the mother.
It's the mother. Good job, Amrita. So Mars is indicating, because it's debilitated, it's indicating a female form or a goddess form of the planet Mars as the family deity. Now, if she was, you know, your family came from France, and so if we look back into France, that would indicate that probably there's a female saint with a sword. Mars always indicates, Mars deities always are carrying weapons. And often, even when they're saints, they're carrying a sword. I mean, what saint carries a sword? Like, for reals, you know? Only a saint connected to Mars. If we look at the Archangel Michael, he's got that Mars sword, you know, cutting off a dragon's head. So some female saint connected to Mars would be indicated as a family deity there. You know anything about that?
So, I mean, in France, the obvious go-to is Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc. Her family owned a bunch of castles in France back in the day. So we got that Joan of Arc energy right there.
It might be fun to figure out what pre-Christian figure Joan of Arc is plastered over.
Exactly.
Because there are very few saints that go down in history that don't have a very convenient, much older figure. Like that, Joan of Arc was probably just the update in the Catholic era for that figure.
Fully. I was just in Serbia, Austin, and the Serbian Orthodox Church is awesome. It is so astrological, it's mind-blowing. They, like, all the saints and they all, like, some saints are holding a key in their hand and others are holding a book and some are holding they all have these symbols and they're worshipped on certain days of the week and they have fasts and everything. I mean, it's like, I'm like, oh my God, this is pure Hinduism. No.
Yeah, well, and when you look at the scheduling of saint days, you're like, oh, that's the third, you know, that's the first Sunday after the sun, you know, gets to its midsummer point and this is a solar, you know, like it's all in there. I mean, you know, the most obvious is with Easter, but a lot of the saint days have that same astrological logic behind them.
Yep. So there we have the family deity. And I would suggest when we're looking at the family deity, even if the person, they're in love with Hinduism or they're in love with whatever, it's always good to try and trace it back to the family connection. Mm-hmm. Because it's not your deity, it's family deity. And so if you can tap into the, what the ancestors were connected to, that's your ideal.
And if they're Jewish?
Jews and Protestants we have issues with. And for Jews, we can at least go to the angels. For Protestants, we have to kind of take on some image of Jesus. And what would be a
Mars? Not necessarily. I mean, if you think about, I mean, there's also a lot of Great Mother through the Virgin stuff that's more Catholic, but there's Catholic. Also, that's, you know, the there's thing. A lot in, of Protestantism. There's
in Catholicism, you can take the mother, but in Protestantism, we gotta. In Hinduism, if the person's a Hare Krishna, we have to go with a form of Krishna. If they're right. Protestant, we go with a form of Jesus. And if we go with the form of Jesus, what's a form of Jesus that's very Martian?
I mean, he doesn't really carry weapons, but when he's on the cross, I mean...
That's... When he's on the cross, that's Saturn. He's suffering. He's being...
Are you talking to us?
Huh?
No, that wouldn't be it.
Well, so we have... Jesus's martial moments include the harrowing of hell after he's died and come back. We have him knocking over the tables of the moneylenders. I can't think of anything else offhand.
Those are two.
But I think you're right. I think, you know, like thinking about Protestants, I grew up in a largely Protestant area. Uh-huh. They do interpret, they, you know, people make of the Jesus what they want. There's like merciful Jesus. There's the ass kicking Jesus. There's the wise Jesus. You know, I mean, seriously.
Totally.
I'm flashing on, there's this traveling group of weightlifters, Christian weightlifters, called the Power Team. Uh-huh. And they would rip phone books in half with the power of Christ. And so, like, that's a Protestant mutation.
Yeah,
but, I mean, mutation. Protestantism, because it's, you know, in a sense, because the options are less, tends towards very exotic mutations, like the... You know, the snake handling cults and the, you know, those who do the glossolalia and all of that. But it all starts with the word Jesus.
Exactly. And so like that's why we stay with Jesus and we get a form that's Martian. We get one of those images of Jesus as Martian. If it was a Hare Krishna, what form of Krishna would we use?
The Shrimpati.
Nope, has to be Krishna. Yeah, but for them we gotta stay Krishna. They even get like a little avoidant of even the different forms of Vishnu.
Oh, right.
We want Krishna on the battlefield.
Right.
We want Krishna on the battlefield with a bow poured back.
Yeah.
You know, we want him fighting.
Yeah.
All right? So, and if we get bigger, then we can get into, you know, if yeah. So we play with that and we make sure that we dig into the family and we get a good family image.
So I have a question,
yeah.
If that's okay. Okay, so there are certainly families which may or may not, you know, go to church and have icons of various gods around, but the true center of their belief is on, you could say, a more corrupt principle. You know, people talk about worshiping mammon, right?
Worshiping,
you
know, what?
Mammon, you know, worshiping money, gold above people. And so there are certainly families like that, right? And so how would that be into, what types of conditions might we see the second house in this chart take on in order to represent a sort of...
Materialism? Man and mammon. It's a biblical thing.
I don't know. I don't fully understand the mammon concept. So,
mammon was just an example. Mammon is a anthropomorphization of the worship of greed. But my point is, so we've gone over different forms of sort of legitimate deities for divine principles that families might worship. But how, you know, what does a person who comes from, for example, you know, a greedy, power hungry family where that's really what they worship, what does that look like? Does that make sense now?
It's going to be Rahu or Saturn there.
Okay.
It's going to be that kind of energy.
Maybe something that looks cursed.
Approaching a Vayugraha.
A what?
A wind planet. So Saturn, right. Rahu, that wind energy gives materialism. Capricorn, okay. Capricorn itself also gives that materialism energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that worship of greed is Capricorn.
Okay.
As a Rashi, that's the sign that represents that.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, yeah, so like a malefic wind planet.
Yeah, exactly. Which, okay. Well, all the wind planets are malefic.
I guess they are, okay.
Yeah. and there's that whole correlation there with that.
I would like to just add as a side note, up here in Ashland, pretty much since the day of the solar eclipse, the skies have been choked with ash and it smells like a barbecue outside. And it's given me a very physical template to consider malefic wind.
Yeah, I wonder what the second. Have you predicted anything for the second? September 2nd?
No, I have not predicted anything. I've been way overworked.
Yeah, Mars.
And so I'm a little behind on things. The Mars Mercury thing.
The Mars.
Well, so it's interesting.
But it's Mars transiting the eclipse degree.
Yeah.
Nothing
specific. I mean, it seems very clear that Mercury is going back to the site of that eclipse in order to clarify something.
Mm-hmm.
And there will probably be information made public as far as the United States big drama / pro wrestling match goes. And I think on a personal level, people will actually start understanding what the hell that eclipse was about for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, it was very powerful and very obscure. And there were probably insights and potential turning points encoded in that dirty water. But we kind of need Mercury to filter that before we'll see what's up. What's interesting is that right after that, Mercury does two conjunctions with Mars, which is somewhat rare as far as within a two-week period, and certainly suggests fights, slander, legal trouble, verbal attacks, et cetera, et cetera. I am interested to see what that will look like on a collective level, especially for the U.S.
All right, back to the D20.
Anyway, yeah, sorry.
But we all got how to play with the family deity. And when do we need the family deity?
I'm sorry, you guys. I have to say goodbye.
All right. I got all the recordings on the website up to date. So
sweet.
Make sure you jump in and listen to the end of it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Bye, guys.
It's at the bottom of the side link. It's on the archive.
Okay. Right. Awesome.
So, all right. When do we use the family deity?
To remedy the family.
Oh, you guys. We have two indications. One, malefic affliction to the fourth house. Two, the person says, my dad's sick with cancer, my mom lost her job, my brother's getting a divorce, my sister just got cheated and is losing her home. It's like everything in the family is falling apart. At that point, we know we need to go to the family deity and something needs to be done for the family deity. All right, so we have two indications of when we need to figure out the family deity. So everything's not working for everybody in the family. And at that point, we don't even try and fix it, something for the person. We sit there and say, listen, take care of the family deity. Come back to me in 40 days. And then we can, you know, once you got your family junk out of the way, let's focus on you. So that's one time. And when we see the fourth house has all these afflictions, then we want to look to the family deity. Fourth house will show, lots of afflictions in the fourth house will show feng shui issues or family issues.
Have
so,
some afflictions.
Huh?
Have
fourth.
Some
You have afflictions in your fourth? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the time where the family deity becomes important. Now, using Jessica's chart, I read it out, right? Everybody has it? So she has Mars in the second. We talked about that. Lugna Lord has gone where?
To the 12th.
To the 12th. So what's that mean? Where's the focus in her spirituality?
Meditation.
So if she was like, you know, I'm thinking about joining the Hare Krishnas and being a full bhakti all the time, or maybe I should do more, you know.
Well, it's with Moon.
With Moon, it's still in the 12th house. Right. In this point, we're in the 12th house, we're looking at what kinds of meditation. Mm. We're not going to look at the bhakti based on the planet, we're going to look at what types of meditation based on the house with the planet in. Does that make sense? So with the moon there, what would the moon be indicating about types of meditation? Not types of bhakti, but types of meditation.
Puja is
going to be third house.
But there's a Manasa Puja that is like a meditation that...
We wouldn't even get... So right here with the moon... The moon is more really making sure that there's an affective engagement in the meditation.
It's exalted to, moon too.
Yep, to pull somebody into it, we want to activate the emotions. So in whatever they're doing, we're activating the emotions to go and strengthen the dhyan.
Right.
Saturn means like definitely some retreat time and some time where she's by herself and not with anybody else.
Mm.
And it's Mercury. And what would Mercury indicate there? Take a guess.
Buddha.
I'm
thinking.
Mercury would indicate there's an intellectual approach.
Yeah.
So on a certain level, there is a Buddhist kind of nature. Mm-hmm. You know, because the whole Buddhism is very mercurial.
Yeah.
And so it's this approach of, okay, these are the distractions, these are the... So it's this deep study of dhyan, of deep meditation. So it's not just approaching it from an experiential perspective, but it's also experiencing it from a intellectual perspective and then going into the practice of it.
Hmm.
Moon
is also Lord of the second house.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe bringing the family to that.
All right. So now if she said, let's see, do I... We'll leave that way. We talked about the Lord of Rahu and Ketu as being an important planet to get a person over their ego. What planet is going to be getting her over her ego?
Jupiter.
And how's Jupiter going to do it?
In the 11th.
And Jupiter gone to the 11th, is that a place where she can easily get over her ego? No. 11th is a house of a lot of struggles. So it means the whole ego game is a big struggle for her. Now people will look from a spiritual perspective in the D1, the Rashi for that. And, you know, it doesn't matter how big the ego is. Sometimes the bigger the ego, the easier it falls. So we got to really differentiate that and really look at more that ego development for spiritual purposes in the D20. In the D1, we're looking at ego development for personal presentation in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does a person have a healthy ego so when they go to work, they present themselves in a nice way?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're looking at ego in D1. In D20, we're looking at, do they have the ability to detach from their ego, to not be over, you know, engrossed in what am I getting from this spiritual practice,
mm-hmm.
but really to have that right attitude to sense of self.
Right.
All right. And we see that there's a struggle with that here, because that Lord has gone to that house of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Planet in the 8th house, what's that going to do? So the planet in the 8th house is that which blocks you from God. And the 8th house is the house of transmutation, transformation. So the planet in the eighth house is the most important planet that we need to work on transmuting. The planet in the sixth shows our issues with spirituality. What are the things that are hurting our spirituality? So if Venus was in the sixth, what would that indicate is hurting our spirituality?
Love affairs,
chasing after the opposite sex. If Mars was there, what would be hurting our spirituality?
Too much fighting and arguing.
Great. So those are the things that are pulling us down, pulling down our spirituality. Now in the eighth, it's slightly different. So in the sixth, these are the things that are like that we are doing that are blocking our spirituality. Mm-hmm. In the eighth, it's a much more nija dosha, meaning an innate quality. So Venus here is indicating that there's a seeking after pleasure, and that seeking after pleasure is blocking the road to God. So in that transformation, the seeking after pleasure has to be turned into this bhakti, this falling in love with something of a higher level, this transmuting into divine love. And we can't avoid that. We have to go into that. Because Venus is in that eighth, that needs to be focused on.
So you're speaking of transforming the lower Venus into a higher Venus.
Exactly. So anything in the sixth house, we just got to get rid of it. It's a problem that needs to stop.
Right.
It's this external thing that's happening that we need to stop doing externally.
Right.
In the eighth, it's an internal thing that needs to be transformed.
Hmm.
Cool, huh?
Yeah.
You got anything in the eighth?
I don't have anything in the sixth.
Well, you're lucky.
Lagna Lord goes to seventh, so that makes me think that
Lagna Lord goes to seventh. That's why you're the leading. That's why you're in charge of leading the musicians at Navratri.
Yes.
You're the Kirtan leader. That's your spiritual path, right there.
It's
the house of Kirtan.
Okay. I was just thinking it was like house of like. You said sex or relationships.
Nope. Venus. Just Venus.
Okay.
Venus in the sixth is showing a problem. All the other houses, they're not problems in that way. That even the 11th, it's showing struggle, but it's not like problem. Six and eighth, we have problems there. But you got the difference between those two types of problems,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right.
So yeah. With the planet in the eighth, we're looking at like the quality of that planet, and trying to use a more positive
the key with the planet in the eighth, it's transmutation, transformation. We got to do the inner alchemy with the eighth house.
So like Mars would be like Ahimsa.
So Mars, that Ahimsa would be more sixth house Mars, because sixth house Mars, they're fighting with people, they're arguing, and that's like that's bringing down their spirituality.
Okay.
In the eighth house, they're being too forceful. They're trying to get some spiritual growth. They're doing practices and expecting things. They're pushing. There's this pushiness. They're like, okay, I'm gonna do this ritual. Where's the results? Give me that. And it's like, maybe you get them, maybe you don't. Like, you got to do it from a higher direction. And so, what would be that higher transformation of Mars?
The spiritual warrior.
Spiritual warrior. Staying focused, staying on everything, not giving up, continual focus.
Okay.
And it's a fine line between being too forceful and being a spiritual warrior. It's transmutation. We're taking the same thing and we're raising its frequency. Where in the sixth house, we got to get rid of it. It needs to be negated. It needs to be stopped. And now,
right.
the big thing here is a love. If somebody's having a love affair, is it bad for their spirituality?
I'd say yes.
Why?
why?
Yeah.
It disturbs the partnership, you know, it disturbs, which is, you know, the spiritual path other than celibacy.
That's personal opinion cultural opinion.
Okay.
Based on this, if somebody's having an affair, is it going to hurt their spirituality?
It depends on the house.
It totally depends on the house. If Venus is in the second house, or Venus is in the first house, or Venus is in the ninth house, the affair has nothing to do with their spirituality.
Okay.
They can be a great meditator, have an affair, and still be a great meditator.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I'm bringing this up is we got all this cultural stuff that's been put on us, mm-hmm. but as astrologers, we got to kind of drop some of our cultural jargon that's been put on us, because in another culture, it's like, how can I say, if we go to, there's the story of African villages where on Friday nights, they go dancing and go home with whoever they want, and then in the morning, they all go back to their own house. Or you know, in other cultures where they have multiple partners, and other partners where they have concubines, and, you know, so, like, what's... You know, our culture has this Christian thing of monogamy, and it's only one. Other pagan cultures might, like, do a hand tying, and you're married for a year, and after that you can decide whether you're married or not again the next year. So we got to be real careful of our Christian culture and background. And we don't want to overlay that onto the chart. We go to the D20. What's blocking the spirituality? If Venus isn't blocking it, then Venus is not blocking it. Now, if Venus was in the sixth house, that affair and that wrong use of sexual energy is pulling down their spirituality. Even if whatever the wife said it's okay or the husband said it's okay, that Venus energy is pulling them down. So we got to get very specific. How is this energy impacting this person?
Mm-hmm.
So you got how we're separating out, we're really making sure that everybody's path is individual. There's no thing here that's the same for everybody. What pulls one man down liberates another.
Right. And to clarify, this is the chart where you said, you know, exalted planets are not ideal.
Exalted planets have a lot of ego. So if we look at Jessica's chart, she has that exalted moon in in the 12th house.
Mm-hmm.
And so so in the past, do you mind if I talk about your alcoholism? So in the past she had a lot of alcoholism where she blacked out. Moon Saturn. Mm-hmm. So if she was a nun and she's blacking out, they'd say, oh, she's in samadhi. I've seen this before. So Moon Saturn is making it so she's disappearing her consciousness. This needs to be raised to a higher frequency where she's consciously disappearing consciousness. And she has to be careful because she has this power to really absorb and to enter trance state. And because she can do it and she can do it quickly, there's a chance of easily becoming egotistical about it. And when we become egotistical, we get attached to the method instead of where the method's getting us. In the end, we have to be humble because everything is just method. Source is beyond all methods, beyond all conceptions. This chart right here is just how do we get to source. All right, so we don't have time to do D24, so we'll do D24 and D20 and D60 next week, and then we'll do that the first half an hour, 45 minutes, and then we'll do remedies for the rest of the class. That doesn't give us too much time for the remedy chapter here, but it's a small chapter anyway in volume one. All right. Fun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glad you joined us, Austin.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to drop in. Always yeah. good. A lot of good little bits.
And the big thing, you know, there was, and you asked this question earlier today, but, you know, I had this, I went off and I had to drill into her for a while. This woman, and she's not here today for class. There's like four people that didn't show for class. But, you know, she kept saying, well, what if something in the divisional chart disagrees with something in the Rashi? And she kept like fighting, well, what if this disagrees? But when we really get these divisional charts, it's impossible for anything in the divisional chart to disagree with the Rashi. Because, you know, when we looked at Jessica's chart, we're looking at the family deity. There's no family deity in the Rashi. When we look at her skill of going into trance, there's no skill of going into trance in the Rashi. You know what I mean? We're looking at that. The indications that are in these houses are being indicated very specifically, details that we don't see in the D1. And so it's this deepening of what is in the D1. So for example, you were asking about like for example, you have a debilitated Mercury in the D1 and an exalted Mercury in the D9. And so Mercury is debilitated in the in the D1, and a debilitated Mercury in the D1 either does excess amount of writing or lack of writing. Person either can't put anything together on paper, or they write these novels that have a tendency, you know, the first 50 pages are describing the walk to the bathroom. You know, so it's just like excess. And but because you have that exalted Mercury in the Navamsa, it supports that Mercury to say, hey, I'm writing lots, but we're going to bring a deeper quality into it. So it's that Mercury is still going to do the same thing. It's still in the ninth house. It still has this philosophical view of the world. It's still focused on what it's focused on. But instead of being weak and all over the place, it's going to get this extra focus and detail oriented. It's going to get a goal. You see, that's the thing. The Nietzsche Mercury in the Rashi, it's lots of writing, but where's the goal of the writing? So the D9 just strengthened that. And so there's lots of writing, but now there's a goal. But it's
that
still,
makes sense.
It's still writing about the same thing being indicated by Mercury in the D1.
Right. The activity of Mercury is not necessarily different, but it has an interior orientation or guide. I also hear from, let me know what you think about this. Also, what I'm hearing is that working with whatever debilitations are indicated in D1, it might be easier to remediate or get actions in that area to a more balanced state if there is something, if the planet is exalted in the D9, it has an interior sort of guide rail to getting closer to proper activity.
No, it's automatically, it's guaranteed.
Okay.
If it's exalted in the D9, it's guaranteed to get, it's called Nietzsche Bunga.
Right.
So if Mercury, your Mercury is a Nietzsche Bunga Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
It means it goes into the, and in the end, it makes it more powerful because it knows both sides of the spectrum. Nietzsche Bunga means it's the reversal of debilitation.
Right.
And the reversal of debilitation is more powerful than an exaltation.
Oh, right. So I was aware of the literal translation, but the image you gave of being able to go into the depths of a fall and then to rise up from that, we have that planet has a richer experience
totally,
than a planet which
exactly.
has only existed in the heaven realms.
And that's what Nietzsche Bunga means.
Okay, that's interesting.
Nietzsche Bunga means that it has that depth to it.
And so in the contrary situation, where you had a very strong planet that was badly debilitated, it's like somebody with a good sword who keeps cutting the wrong people, or
It's Uchibunga means that the planet has all these high ideals, but then they're not giving the result. It's not completing. It's not coming to fruition.
Okay.
Dull sword. I don't know if dull sword's the.
I was thinking of. Yeah. I was thinking of a particular case I know of where you have this really powerful Mars in the D1, and then a not so good Mars, a Mars in Cancer in the D9. Uh-huh. And this is a person who's awesome at fighting, but always end. Even when he wins, he ends up making everything worse for everyone.
Exactly.
But he's awesome at fighting. Like, as far as the contest itself is concerned,
yep.
He seems very dignified. It's just that the results always end up being, there are no trophies for these victories.
Yep. And so it's ending is never just in, you know, it's a high ideal. And with that exultant Mars, he has a high ideal of how to fight. Like, he,
right.
I'm sure he doesn't, like, whatever the rules are, he follows them perfectly and stays in alignment with them. And with that debilitated Mars in the D9, he has the potential of losing because his ideals have become too high. And he has this interior sadness because his ideals are not being met.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Exalted planet has high ideals. And when it becomes Uchibunga, when the exaltation is reversed, you know, it's like this loss of idealism.
Mm-hmm.
Think about when
I did everything right and this happened.
Exactly.
There's a crisis there.
Exactly. That whole, or, and they have this view of what it should be, but it didn't look like that. And there's a, yeah.
Okay,
where,
interesting.
Where the thing is with it, with the opposite, the Nichibunga, the ideal is, hey, as long as it's a book and it has the idea in it, I'm happy. And then it ends up being this awesome book that's like super cool. So you know what I mean? It's the opposite.
Yeah. There's a lot there about expectation versus result. Then.
Exactly.
Interesting. Or trees and
fruit. All right.
Anyway, thank you very much for allowing me to interrupt constantly and ask only tangentially related questions.
I'm so happy you're digging into the Jyotish realm, man. So
yeah, well, it's I don't know, it's time. It's what the clock says.
I think so. You know, I read
Jyotish.
It's time. I read the Greek texts all the time, and honestly, when I read them, I don't know how anybody who doesn't know Jyotish can think that they can read them and understand them personally.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, you mentioned, you described me as a Western astrologer earlier.
Yeah.
And that's not entirely wrong. But like, you know, the quote unquote Western tradition basically starts in Alexandria, which is in northeastern Africa, which is not what people mean when they say Western. It's not like astrology began in France, right? It's, you know, it was sort of a pan-Eastern Mediterranean tradition at a time where India and Greece and everybody was talking constantly. And so I don't know, you know, I feel like there is a true astrology, for lack of a better term, sort of an unter astrology, which all of these things are getting at. And I find that Jyotish has a lot of pieces that are missing, I would say conspicuously missing,
mm-hmm.
from the Greek texts, where it's like, well, obviously they were doing this. Where's the technique for doing this?
Yeah.
And especially as far as the gods go, because that was a wildly polytheistic time. And you look at authors from that time and they'll be like, yeah, the gods in, we're not going to talk about it in this astrology book. Like, there was a cultural thing, like, that's for mystery cult. That's like mystery religion time. And part of what we do is we don't, you know, the first rule of mystery religion is that we don't talk about mystery religion. That's why it's called fucking mystery religion, right? And so, but anyway, you have this kind of code of silence about a lot of the Devada stuff that the Jyotish material slots right into. And you know they were doing that in Alexandria. Like, it's just so obvious that was happening.
My other look at the way that they handle deities is kind of like when I looked at that Mars, and we could interpret it as so many different deities. they didn't need to sit there and say what the god was. They just needed to say it's a weak Mars. And there was a certain expectation that the students and people reading were trained to know how to, depending, because like in India, the way it goes is I'm trained if a Shaivite comes to me versus a Vaishnavite versus a Buddhist versus a Christian. I'm trained to be able to give them each their remedy according to their tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no book on that. But that's just like the way my guru taught me, and it's just the way it's been done for centuries.
Well, and honestly, if you were in Alexandria in the first century BC or AD, you had people from, you know, at least 10 different religious faiths coming to you.
Yep.
They had to have been able to do that.
Exactly.
Like, there's literally no existing in that place and time as a scholar of mysteries and sciences who consults with people that those questions are going to be flying at you. How many weird temples were there within 10 miles of that practitioner at that place and time?
10 blocks.
Yeah, and there are bits of it that are attested to in the Hellenistic stuff, but I've got a good feel for empty spaces. I'm like, this is half of a building. Where's the roof?
Uh-huh.
And I feel, you know, there's a lot of stuff in Jyotish that just goes, it's like, oh, there's the other half of the building. It's too bad people have been missing that for so long. It's super fun stuff. There's one more point that was really relevant. What was it? Fuck. Oh, well, I'll let it go.
I'm glad to have you here, brother.
Yeah, well, again, thank you for having me. Thank you, everybody, for tolerating me.
All right. Namaskaram. See y'all next week.
Yeah.